Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Hello and welcome back to the PLL Happy Hour Podcast after an electric week at Northwestern Medicine Field at Martin Stadium, right outside Chicago. I'm Kevin Brown alongside Chris Rosenthal for Inside Lacrosse. Rosie, we've got a special podcast here. Man, I'm so excited to talk a lot of ball with you. How are you feeling? What's going on in your mind?
I'm feeling good. I thought it was a fantastic weekend of lacrosse. Not really sure if any lessons were learned, but I feel like that's just kind of the way that the league's going right now. You know, I think, as they say, right, any given weekend has never been more true than it is right now.
Lessons. There are no lessons to take from any weekend ever. Stop with your takeaways. Just wrap up your wrap-up column and throw it away, because every weekend is in shambles. No, we have a lot to talk about here, Rosie. We have a lot of storylines. We have coming away from an all-star game weekend, which we had some nice interviews with CJ Kearse and Joey Spallina, both resulting in some podcast bumps for their respective clubs. Rosie, let's start with CJ Kearse, because his Philadelphia Water Dogs started the weekend off with a pretty electric top of the East versus top of the West matchup, where CJ himself put the exclamation mark on a absolute thriller of a game, in which there was just a lot of context going around. The first off, Quinn Kastnick, great call of his sixth goal less than a minute ago, and he swims his way past Cullen Brown, avoids the slide from Brian Tevlin, buries it bottom right, gives them the insurance goal at 15-13. Rosie, you tweeted out a great tweet in which a general manager / coach had told you at the time, CJ Kearse might already be the best player in the world. And, you know, that was him coming off a Torton, one of the best seasons ever, and a national championship with Cornell, in a season in which he had already broken his hand. So, like, oh, he's healthy now, coming off an NLL season, which he won that title too. It's like, what can't he do? What was your reaction to him putting that away?
Yeah, you know, the thing about CJ Kearse is he is so good in a variety of ways as far as his scoring goes. And the Water Dogs have been really successful in showing that, right? He can play so well off ball. You know, he can find some seams on a power play, situations like that. But, of course, sometimes you just need a guy to take the ball and kind of whoop up on everybody in his way. And so, you know, you see the kind of skillful plays, you know, the kind of heady, smart plays he displayed throughout that last game. And, you know, since he's been running around this season, but, you know, sometimes the shot clock's running down, you just kind of have to toss him the ball and get out of his way. And he certainly has that in the bag as well. So I think that being the sixth goal is really kind of a perfect way to summarize, you know, the extent and variety of his skills.
How about him getting a delay of game penalty too, right before Bill Tierney's livid, whole Water Dogs bench is like, what are you talking about? And just an insane sequence of events just transpired that, you know, Josh Yago picks it up to get the man down stop. He takes a shot, goes out of the end line, and CJ is not the one to back it up. I don't know if you remember this. He was on the crease, and he's like, no. We're up one. Like, sure, we have 5 seconds left on the shot clock. We end up in the corner. That's not what I'm going to do. And I'm going to swim past my guy, who's an All-American at Ohio State, and His just like shimmy past Tevlin was just, I mean, Quint nailed the call because he was just speaking for all of us watching at home, because we're all at that moment when he gets the GLE and makes that move, gets free for the bottom corner finish, and we're all just like, oh my God, you're getting it. Truly an MVP moment from the MVP frontrunner in his fourth game of the season, the Water Dogs' sixth. And it puts the Water Dogs up to 4-2 on the season. Still with a -4 score differential, Rosie, from that woeful loss to the Boston Cannons. We will get to coming up next. Rosie, just, it's a fascinating parlay into the MVP race in general. Inside the Cross, as you're listening to this, has released the MVP race update since our first watch list for the 2026 season with our esteemed guest of analysts and compiling and aggregating their top 10s together. Rosie, I really struggled to get to 10 for mine. I'll tell you what. CJ Kirst is the undisputed number one choice. We need a hot take specialist to come in here and tell us otherwise, because it's literally impossible to say that. But if, and I wrote this in my kind of second half of the season preview article, that if someone would rival him, it's going to be Michael Sowers. And he ended up with what? 3-3 again, 3-2 against the Redwoods.
Yeah, we're 3-3.
3-3, so matched his points, except it's more even, more facilitating, had more touches, has the most assist opportunities in the league, which, you know, it's tough to be like, oh, it's, he has the most would-be points. Okay, well, Schellenberger actually just passed him this past week, 42-41. So I take that back. But he has the second most, and it's kind of the situation where it's, I think, comparable to last year. Brendan O'Neill, Pat Cavanaugh. Are these two finalists going to eat at each other voting-wise, whereas another player from, whether it's the Redwoods, somehow keep surging and take that top seed, someone from them, or if somehow if the Water Dogs don't get the one seed, then whoever's the one seed in the East has a really good shot as well.
Yeah, it's kind of wild how Michael Sowers almost quietly put up the same number of points in that game. Just kind of, you know, I guess especially because of that sixth goal that Kirst had, really drawn a lot of attention, and rightfully so. But yeah, you know, 3-3, only one turnover on the day. You know, Sowers is putting together an impressive resume in his own right, and it will kind of be interesting to see, like you mentioned, at least as far as attention goes, if he is going to, you know, demand enough of the spotlight, or if his contributions are going to be kind of downplayed. You know, maybe people view his job as that much easier when Kirst is on the field. You know, maybe the assists come easier. You know, maybe his space gets a little easier and he gets less credit. And Kirst kind of draws the default number one as far as, you know, MVP.
Well, you know what I think the knock is against him is, and I'm looking through the box score right now, and it's actually not holding up to be true because of their lackluster first half. But usually, by his own admission, Sowers likes to get the scoring started himself in that first half, right? And like CJ Kirst is so clutch, and he showed it again this weekend. Sowers has shown flashes of being clutch, but he has usually done his damage more in the first half, getting his teammates involved, getting his own first and foremost. But this game, he was very productive in the second half. Yeah, had a couple assists, and again, he had that diving finish coming across the crease to give them the lead with over 3 minutes left to 14-13.
Yeah, had the dunk that didn't count, but applaud the effort. We shouldn't vote MVP for things that don't count, probably, but, you know, might give him a little half a point for trying it.
If that was part of the voting, then Brendan Lavelle with the Around the World is getting some Defensive Player of the Year somehow.
Somebody might, right? They don't really tell us what kind of criteria to stick to.
Correct. They do not. Let's go back and forth a little bit on the MVP order before we go into Utah and Boston here, because we're talking CJ Kirst, Michael Sowers, I think, are neck and neck in my first two MVP leaderboard options. Rosie, do you have another guy in your top?
Well, you know, I think it is, I think everybody is currently battling for second place, even despite the Sowers praise. Someone who I would look at, especially as the season gets a little bit tighter, stakes get a little higher, is Brett Dobson. I would throw his name in the ring. Might have to go kind of off menu as far as offensive guys go. It has a precedent. We've seen it before with goalie and faceoff specialist winning it. So I don't think the league is inherently locked into giving it to an offensive producer. And right now, as far as the goalie position goes, I think Brett Dobson has been tremendous and consistent. And while not having to do quite as much in this past game, I'm sure we'll discuss a little bit here, because I think his defense just kind of essentially choked New York out for the most part. I think it's also important that they just kind of had him in place while the offense came around and got their bearings a little bit more. It's, you know, if everybody had to suggest 10 names, you know, I think maybe upwards of six could be unique names just because the way the league is shaked out right now. I would toss Dobson's name up there as one of my high nominees right now.
The reigning MVP for the NLL and the Georgia Swarm, the goaltender of the year that really was super valuable for their run up the standings in the NLL playoffs. And it's a good shout. You look at Utah's defense, they give up 9 the first game, 7 the second. Salt Lake City weekend back in week one, and Nick Marshuda was, of course, the starter back then. He also, then they had a bye, and Brett Dobson was able to get back in the lineup. Marshuda was 63% in two games. Dobson was larger sample size, I admit it. 60%, very good, MVP worthy conversation. He's in the conversation, people. But that's my knock against him. That's why he's a little lower on my list. Because I do feel cheesy, Rosie. Like, if I'm going to be like, oh, the top three MVP race, and I'm just going with the top three in the points category.
Right.
Who wants to see that, man? Like, who really thinks that I do? Coulter Maxey, 25 points, 15 scoring points, couple two-pointers. We talked about and praised his name earlier in the season. And what really has stood out to him is the 10 assist coming from a Princeton program where he was really just that lefty marksman on that side. The program's all-time winning scorer, saying something about that illustrious Tigers program. And listen, you're looking at a Boston team that leads the league in scoring points. So Coulter Maxey, put some respect on his name, Rosie.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, so I know he was definitely in my top five. I think he was in my top four or three, if I recall correctly.
You have the receipts.
Yeah, I will, let me grab my email there that I sent that out earlier today. But no, he has been very successful, and I think the great thing about his play this season is he's had several games where you're talking five or more points. You know, it's not like you know, sometimes you'll see these games where if they, you know, kind of open one up on one team and a guy gets, you know, an 8-point night, it kind of does the heavy lifting, kind of disguise some other performances. He does have a 1-point game, but he's got 2 6-point games on the season and a 5-point game in this most recent one against Denver. So he has been putting up a lot of points, a lot of assists, like you mentioned, and has really kind of, elevated his game and the whole performance of this Boston team.
Yeah, listen, we're not talking about this 1-point game against New York. 12-11, who remembers that one? No, it is really interesting because, like, I wrote in my second half of the season preview here that no Jeff T, no Trevor Baptiste, at least for this past week. He was just activated. Very good news for New York fans. Danny Logan returned to the lineup, but just didn't have enough this past weekend in a lopsided result against the Utah Archers, 16-5, plummeting their score differential in the standings. Connor Schellenberger, he's got to a lot of pressure on himself to show up in these games, and he had 2 assists, 0-4 shooting. Really impressive performance by Utah's defense there. So they should get double Sundays for that performance, really. Right. And we'll get to, they may not have had to do as much because of that possession advantage, but let me just rattle off the next couple names here, because the midfielders who I think are impressing the most are Maryland's Aiden Carroll and New York's Brian Costabile. Costabile really just carried them through that 3-3 start, especially the 2-0 weekend, Hofstra, Father's Day weekend, shout out. Aiden Carroll, just kind of an off couple of weeks, right? And then you wrote in your wrap-up, which I really enjoyed, the fact that, all right, Stags, he's always going to be hard on you. It's how he operates. He wants to get the best out of you. It's all a place of love from Coach Stags. What does Aiden Carroll do? He takes it and he runs with it. Matt Brandau, Anna Poitras, the wrinkle in the offense, that they are the primary initiators and Aiden Carroll is the secondary. And it turns out to give him a more open space to fire those bad boys off. And he was great. I think he is a really important part of that offense, because you look at it and you have Joey Spleen of Rapinoe, TJ Malone down on attack. And ideally, TJ Malone is your MVP candidate, right? Like, he's coming off his best game of the season. They get it through X a lot more. I'm just not ready to say, all right, TJ Malone is in the MVP conversation after one good game, whereas Aiden Carroll had been playing well to start the year in that 3-1 start, cooled off. And to show his value a little more, when he cooled off, they weren't winning. And now that he's playing well again, they get back in the winning column.
Yeah, I think that's a great argument in the MVP sort of column. I think, you know, a lot of times when we get caught up in the MVP discussion, I think a lot of people certainly lean towards, productivity and, you know, this guy's got more assists than that guy or whatever. But yeah, I think it should always be considered how much success your team is experiencing and kind of, relative to your personal production. You know, yeah, if you have a bad game or two and it kind of coincides with your team not doing much of anything, you know, certainly seems like it could be, you know, case could be made that, well, maybe you are extremely valuable to that team actually producing. You know, the toughest part, I think, right now about picking these MVP candidates is there's no teams that really are steamrolling everybody. You know, it's not like you see, like when Jeff Teat had his MVP season and he's putting up a billion points every single game, and you say, wow, look at these Atlas juggernaut and look at Jeff T, you know, steering the ship, no brainer all the way around. I guess I think the next couple of games will really sort of
yes and no, right? Like Philly is what, in 3-1 now with CJ in the lineup?
Yeah, they're 3-1 with him in the lineup, yeah.
So 5 goals a game, historic pace. That is starring the mirror T. It just he hasn't really caught up to everyone else in the games played yet.
Right, yeah. We just gotta get a little more sample size on him. But
right.
I mean, feeling pretty good that he's going to continue to be, at least somewhat successful. But
it is fascinating. Like, you know, we brought up, invoked even the Brendan O'Neill Team USA MVP a couple of weeks back, maybe when he was running out of the box and they threw that wrinkle in there. Like, people forget. CJ Kirst, Pat Kavanaugh, was Brendan O'Neill, Connor Shelberg wasn't on that team. Brendan O'Neill, I think, was on that team. The Team USA U20 team in Limerick, Ireland. CJ Kirst had the MVP. Of course, he was going up against some short sticks. So, kind of the same situation as Brendan O'Neill. Consider my point mute. Have you found her email, Rosie?
Yeah, hang on 1 second here.
Yes. Next couple names that you had in your MVP leaderboard race.
Coulter McAfee was number 3 in my suggested MVP nominees.
Interesting. Still no Sours.
I had Sours at 4, actually. Right there.
What about 5? Well, keep it raw.
5? Actually, I had Brendan O'Neill. I didn't.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm real curious about how it's going to play out with him. Is he going to do enough in his own right where, you know, his success is not attributed to the other guys? You know, I mean, that kind of might kind of be a year over year sort of situation. Can he be an MVP in that lineup with Kavanaugh and Bernhardt in particular?
We're all waiting for them to get fully healthy. And, like, when are they going to get healthy? Because they won't reach their full capacity as a team. I think Quint was right to point out that their midfielders aren't providing much help, although Dong Young scored a career high in 4 goals this past week. But Grant Bundy and Justin Anderson and company could be producing a little more for them. But to your point, Brendan O'Neill's facilitating has been awesome. It's just his shot really hasn't fallen, at least the first 4 weeks. And this week, he really took it to my guy, Owen Grant.
Yeah. It's the shooting appears to be coming around. You know, 3 goals this past weekend, 2 in the game before that. But his like you said, his feeding, he's already got 10 assists. That's more than he's ever had in a season. So, you know, something can be said for if someone is having difficulty with the shot for whatever reason, still finding ways to be productive. So, you know, I will actually, it's tricky though, right? Because like, I will certainly give him credit for saying, oh, okay, well, he's found another, kind of another way to produce. You know, if one thing isn't working for him, he's found something else. But, you know, then you still can't ignore the fact that one thing wasn't working for him, right? And it's like, well, you know, if he was shooting a little better, then this would be much less difficult. But yeah, you know, 17% shooting, it is going to be tough to write up in your MVP report about a guy, you know?
But I like your reasoning of like, listen, he's finding ways to still impact the offensive production on that field. And it's a better, like, I'm interested in where do you have Dylan Malloy in there? I think you kind of have to, but it's really only because of the one game. It's the 7-goal game for him. It has catapulted in himself into that MVP conversation, and he had that game winner that was just so memorable the following week, right? And he's an important piece for this Redwoods offense, but like to only score a goal on 6 shots this past week just really left a sour taste in my mouth.
Yeah, you know, earlier in the season, he was super high as a candidate, and for good reason. Just looked, you know, I mean, we're talking John Grant Jr. comparisons, right? Like, and rightfully so during that game against the Archers. But since then,
it's Brett Dobson who said that first.
Right. Absolutely. One of his peers throwing it out there, you know, not just a hot taker, someone who has been on the field and seen that kind of expertise. But yeah, since that, you know, for any sorts of reasons, we're talking 4 points in his last three games total there. So certainly not doing any help for his MVP stock there.
And to round out your top 10, because I was struggling to even reach 8. I think we'll talk about the rookie of the year next week. Who rounded out your top 10 for the MVP leaderboard?
Well, we mentioned TJ Malone. I did have him. Let me see. I'm not going in order anymore. I'm trying to go in surprising order. Put Chris Kavanaugh in 10. You know, who knows? 10 is a lot of people to nominate for this.
We take it up for Dylan Malloy. Like, you can make an argument that I think he is more important to the offense.
Yeah, and a lot of this is going to be conditional on, you know, if these guys pull off some wins here. Let me go with two more guys here. I don't think he has a shot right now, but if we're doing any sort of honorable mentions, and we'll see how this list gets thrown together, I put Zach Currier in the mix.
Ooh.
He had a fantastic game this past weekend. Going to assists, 7 ground balls. If I recall correctly, he's got 3 games of 7 or more ground balls this season.
He's almost more appreciated when he doesn't play full-time offense, right? Like we're too loaded on that end. We drafted these really high-powered rookies. Like, you got to play some D-mid for us. And everyone's like, oh, look at this stat line.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he can go out and get, you know, a quiet 1-on-1 and play some offense, you know, in the mix with the rest of those guys, or he can also get you a quiet 1-on-1 or maybe get like a goal or an assist, but then he'll also have like 3 cause turnovers and 6 ground balls or something like that.
Right.
So yeah, who knows if that's going to be sustained throughout the year, but I gave him a shout for that spot. Let me throw another nominee at you here. What do you think the chances are Joey Spallina works his way up into the conversation?
I think there's maybe a 5% chance. Listen, he has to lead the team in scoring. He has to lead him by a significant amount, maybe even. And Maryland has to win the East. So MVP voting will, of course, it's only the regular season, and we'll be voting for the quarterfinals. If they get a bye week, if he leads the team of scoring, he'll lock up the rookie of the year and enter the MVP race.
Well, it's going to be tough for a rookie to do it anyway, based on the kind of schedule overlap. But I wanted to give him a shout out based on these two things. Currently 2nd in assists per game and 5th in points per game. Now, do I think that will transfer into him winning the MVP this season? I don't think so. But I said, hey, I got 10 guys here. Let me make one of them Joey Spallina. Because, you know, those are pretty good numbers.
Your Syracuse orange is showing, but also it's a good shout. He is very talented and a friend of the pod, a guest of honor, and the podcast bump still applies with this leaderboard. Rosie, yeah. I do want to move on to the weekends that Boston and Utah put together in Chicago, because they were very impressive. We touched on both Utah 16, New York 5. I want to spend less time on this one, but it was not less important, of course. The fact that Utah has really just turned their season around and en route to 3-4 record. They're now coming off another 15-goal display. They've gone and scored double digits in San Diego. They had 14 on Long Island, of course, 15 in Charlotte. This offense has reached a new level after a sputtering start. Rosie, what did you make of the way that they just totally cruised against Atlas?
You know, there's a big emphasis early on with getting Connor Fields involved. And, you know, they set him up and he delivered early on. And then they really just, you saw a lot of transition play from him. You saw a lot of the things that Chris Bates had been talking about doing, you know, like during the draft, kind of explaining, you know, hey, we're going to get these short sticks. We're going to get them running. We're going to get them staying on the field. Like all the kind of stuff he laid out there, you know, almost kind of explaining his vision to everyone, you know, particularly people who might be a little confused as to why he made some of the picks he made. But, you know, he laid it all out there, and that seemed to be the kind of game they were playing. You know, weren't afraid to get up and down. You know, if you had the ball, you were going, right? Piper Bond had a fantastic cause turnover against Levi Anderson, I believe. Checked him, the ball flew out, and he caught it in midair and just took off with it. You know, you had him, Connor Maher scoring his first of the season.
You have a name for that, don't you? When you create the turnover and pick it up yourself?
Yes, sir. That was a takeover. You got that right. Yeah.
Needed to make sure that got out there.
Appreciate it. I need to be more consistent with that. Yes, yes. Piper Bunn had an excellent takeover. And yeah, no, Cam Wires was running a point break. They were all, the transition game was solid. And when you have the combination, right, when you have the transition working and you have somebody like Connor Fields, you know, kind of holding his own in the settled situations, you know, as we could see, look, I mean, New York's got some stuff they got to work through, clearly, right? When you're scoring five, getting beat by 11, there's some discussions that need to be had. But that being said, Utah looked fantastic on both elements of the offense, both settled and transition.
The fact that they only scored five was really concerning. I told you pre-pod in our, of course, production meeting, which is very high level. Schellenberger, I spotlighted him in the kind of the second half of the preview season article that I wrote, that he has a big chance on his shoulders to take over this offense, and it just didn't happen this week. They knew he would be the focal point. He had a significant amount more touches than anyone else. 40. Matt Ramo was the next with 24. He was only 0-for-4 shooting, so you probably want him to even take a few more shots to get out of that slump. Ended up with 2 assists. Kudos to that Archers defense, but it really came down to Mike Sisselberger going 19-for-24. That's nearly 80%, Sisselberger, man. 17 ground balls. He's winning most of them to himself. Zach Tucci gets cut in the couple of days after with Trevor Baptiste coming off the pup list. And he I think, did suffer an injury because there were a significant amount of Danny Logan and Max Krefsky draws in that second half. Which Schisselberger got to stat the pass, but more importantly, feed the ball back to that offense, which has always really been pretty efficient in the 32-second. And, you know, you shine some light on Fields. Sam King, I think, deserves a lot of love. He's really coming into his own, really slow start to the season. Kind of an underwhelming rookie here, coming away from just an all-time great Harvard career, in which he's the all-time points leader. Just so fun to watch. Such an electric player. 2-2 this weekend, and they're going to need more of that going forward. Any other takeaways that you had from that?
Yeah, just further to that, we'll see how it carries on when they play some other guys. Because, like I said, New York was going through it apparently, but it just looked like the Archers seemed to have kind of figured out their recipe, and we'll see how much they can replicate it throughout. But yeah, you mentioned King Ryan Steins with a hat trick, Theo Johnson, two goals, but I also liked two shots from him. Maybe we'll get more than two shots, but certainly not a situation where he's going to shoot him out of the game or anything like that if he's not feeling his shot. Just everyone finding ways to contribute. Mac O'Keefe with a hat trick on nine shots. It just seemed like, it was one of those games where it's kind of all cylinders. And yeah, very solid work from that Utah offense in particular. But yes, we already mentioned the defense. New York had no answers for any of their guys. So many of their guys, when we look at the stats, had more turnovers than points, which is oftentimes quite difficult to come back from, right? Levi Anderson had three turnovers, no points.
Right.
We can go down the list. There's quite a few of them. Costabile, Trainer. It goes on and on. It's a
A lot
difficult stat
whiffs
to
this
read.
weekend, Rosie. A lot of people trying to take shots and the ball just whiffing right out of there. The shot didn't even go forward, it went backwards. A lot of
Yeah,
whiffs.
yeah. A lot of whiffing. No turnovers for Connor Schallenberger, despite all those touches.
I want some turnovers then. Get
Yeah, just.
more aggressive, get more assertive. We want you to take over and start taking some chances there. I don't believe that. I think I saw some turnovers there. The game of the weekend, I thought the most emphatic finish, of course, went to CJ Kirst and the Philadelphia Water Dogs in the Week 8 opener. But the 15-13 win for Boston Cannons against those Denver Outlaws, I thought was the best watch of the weekend. The way that Boston clearly showed they were the hungry dog runs faster with the 8-2 start. Marcus Holman hits that two-pointer. Denver's like, all right, finally, like we'll start playing, like if you guys insist. Makes it a good game and a half. Pretty back and forth from there in the second half, which was a really exciting watch. And then just a really impressive way that they closed this one out with not only Jack Regnery heating up late, but we mentioned Calder Maxey. Graydon Haugh has been so important for him in that two-man game on the left wing. Andrew McMeekin with just a monster of a game. Like, I used to be like, all right, is he my third team All-American? Now he's like, all right, is he an MVP again, a first team All-Pro in the PLL? Like, he is crushing it. And showing his value for this Cannons offense in a way that post game Brian Holman was like, I've been pretty candid about the fact that like face offs, like I don't mind losing them with that 32-second shot clock all the time. Like 50%, 55% is pretty good. But now all of a sudden we got McMeekin, he's freaking like just turning our whole fortunes around here, and just you see how it worked out in the clutch. They were efficient. Regnery to Brian Kelly to seal it. Just totally wholesome, wire to wire, very impressive win for Boston.
Absolutely. McMeekin, it sounds like are we seeing some sort of MVP potential from that guy right there, maybe? I mean,
He's definitely in the rookie of the year conversation now. MVP.
I'm just saying, do we toss him on the board?
Top 10 leaderboard? I think
Yeah.
so. I think you could.
And
You
it
could
certainly
also
seems to make a
trade
big
in
difference.
my Chris Rosenthal 2007 highlights. See what that gets you.
There you go. Yeah, no, this was a fantastic game. I thought a couple things, like if there's a couple things you need to know before you play the Boston Cannons, you got to know, like, Jack Ragnari's split dodge is disgusting. It's absolutely demoralizing, and he has the confidence to throw it at you, you know, whenever he good and well feels like doing it. You got to be aware of that, and that bit Denver. You got to know about my man Graydon Hogg and his pick game, which is lethal as well, and that bit Denver as well. And yeah, you got to watch out for old McMeekin winning those and pushing them forward to himself. So, like, you know, if you had, like, last year's scouting report, you're not worrying about any of that stuff. But the new-look Boston Cannons are really thriving on those guys. You know, of course, Colter McAsee and Marcus Holman as well. Gentlemen like that. But the new wrinkles have really kind of established them as a dangerous team that we saw this past weekend. I was going to write about it in my latest wrap-up. I was going to throw another Graydon Hogg of the Week and give it to Graydon Hogg for the second time in a row. And I should have done it, but I just kind of ran out of space in the column and didn't feel like doing it. But just know that if I was going to do it, he would have won for back-to-back weeks.
So, your listeners of the PLL Happy Hour podcast will know that there were back-to-back Graydon Hogg of the Week awardees. Rosie, let's go on the Fairfield here because we've talked plenty of Chicago. There's some enticing matchups here, and I want to run through them with you, starting with quite the all-time points, career, all-time leaderboard, pro field, across history storyline. With Rob Pinnell playing against his former Redwoods, what other way could you ask for? 3 points in, you know he's going to go for the question mark. How can they stop it? They can. Because he's been doing it for 15 years. Rosie, this is a game that I'm very excited for. It's a Redwoods group that has punched above their weight with injuries to the Cole Kastner and Chris Fake, who just came, the latter of which is who just came off the pup list and will be likely available in Fairfield, per se. The Whip Snakes offense, it has to watch out. They, I don't think, could have the same success against the Chaos group. But the Redwoods have been playing in shootouts recently, really. Like, they've been relying on offense to win these games. So it'll be an interesting one. And then the WLL game is going to be really fun to watch because of the implications that the Maryland Tarm beating the New York Charging created. And if the Boston Guard somehow win without Charlotte North, then all four teams are still in it. And that creates a lot of intrigue surrounding a league that is still fledgling, but has so much skill, firepower, and just star level that you need to be tuning into these games. Rosie, what game are you most excited for? Either Friday, Saturday, even Sunday, even 3-day weekend coming up.
Well, yeah, you know, look, I definitely want to see if Pinnell gets it done this weekend, especially against his old team. Guard Charm, like you just mentioned, what do the Guard have? Obviously, super difficult to impossible to straight up replace Charlotte North, but she's been gone since like the 5th of June. So as far as strategy wise, you would hope and think that Lori DeLuca and the Guard have thought of a backup plan now, kind of see what they can put into action. These are all really good games. If I've got to pick one, I guess let me throw Utah and the Water Dogs Part 2 back into the mix. Relatively recent revenge match on that one. See if CJ keeps it going with the scoring. You know, the last one was a one-goal game, and Utah had a rack of penalties to start game was real kind of tempo wise, real kind of herky jerky. Wasn't a smooth game at all. It had a lot of time to kind of kill off. So, you know, I'm sure sort of the main, if you're Chris Bates or whatever, you know, Tony Resch, the main sort of message there is going to be, hey, you know, don't be stupid, right? No dumb penalties. At least try to get 6-on-6 play as much as we can. And, you know, we'll see, you know, two teams both feeling pretty good coming off wins. See what they can do when they clash there on Saturday afternoon.
11-10 final that was back in San Diego before the All-Star break. It was definitely a game where we were more questioning the Water Dogs, how they're going to incorporate the rookies than any self-questioning about the Utah's penalties in that game. But it really came back to bite them, like you said there. So rematch of that 2023 PLL championship, which was the most exciting championship.
That's right. I think 18 saves on that one from old MVP nominee Brett Dobson. Let me say this, because we didn't mention either of these games, wildly enough. Two games on ABC
Oh, yeah.
this coming weekend. You know, get it on your television, get it on at the bar, go out to the games like that. You know, ABC games could be huge. We've had some good ones in the past. Carolina, Denver, and New York versus Boston, closing it out on Sunday afternoon. I will say this for New York, Boston. Real excited to see if New York comes out and does anything based on their last performance, right? Like, where do you go from a 5-goal game? It would not be shocking if they have some sort of huge bounce back, right? You know, I'm sure there were some
Right.
team meetings this weekend.
No doubt.
Real kind of looking in the mirror kind of situation. You know, if you're Boston, like, I don't think trap game is the right word when you're going against, you know, what a team that has two MVPs on it. Trap game certainly doesn't work. Also, they got the same records, right? So there's a lot going on there. But Boston has to be very careful to make sure that, you know, all the confidence they had and all the lessons they learned in their past victories, they kind of carry them along and make sure they stomp out this Atlas team with a huge, huge in-conference battle there.
What we were bringing up in our elite pre-production meeting here, Rosie, the fact that every week, whoever loses the week before is has to be favored from now on. Because if you're gonna get embarrassed the week before, you're gonna bring it the next week, and the Atlas are certainly gonna bring it against Boston. That's what makes that matchup so exciting. That's what makes the Carolina Denver matchup so exciting, because Carolina laid an absolute egg against Maryland. They showed a little bit of fight maybe in the second half, but they were terrible. And the Denver Outlaws were playing with their food. They were maybe a little complacent. They knew that they were maybe a little bit better than Boston. And post game, they were like, "That's a team that is better than their record says." And that's what you're gonna say when you just lose to them, of course, because, like, yeah, you just lost, and so that's gonna be a really exciting matchup, and I think that's the one that I'm most excited for. This is a Western Conference for the taking at the moment. If Denver can't get their act together, but more importantly, their health more complete, then the Redwoods are looking like they're the team that they can take that top seed in the semifinal berth. But Carolina, man, like 3-4, they're not out of it, and they're gonna play right before a team who looks to be putting it all together with the Utah Archers.
Yeah, a lot of pressure for all these teams right now. The standings are super close. Not a lot of guys running away with it, but you do feel like some people are kind of based on, we'll say based on last weekend alone, entering that sort of must-win territory, even if the record doesn't indicate it yet.
Rosie, give us a lasting thought on this edition of the PLL Happy Hour podcast. What can the listeners expect? Any content coming from you? Any excitement that you're looking forward towards the second half of the season here?
Yes. Absolutely. Content, yes. Working on some stuff. We'll see what happens with it. Feeling good back in the lab. Let me tell you this. I am super excited about the way that the rest of this season is going to play out. I got no idea what's going to happen, but I'm very much looking forward to being there when it does happen. And yeah, some content. We'll see. We'll try to get some stuff together. Got some ideas. See if they can pan something out. But yeah, looking forward to some stuff. That's what I'll say. What about yourself?
Like, I was going to end the podcast there. Do you? So the last question for you. I wrote about it a little bit. Do you agree with me that it does feel like a title game collision course for Philly Denver this year in terms of winning? They're my obvious favorites to win the East and the West. You look at Philly firepower, Denver kind of maybe not full capacity last time out, but should be the best team in the West.
Yeah, I look at Philly and Denver the same way, actually. And when I look at them, I think, you better win. Like, you know what I mean? Like, listen, you better get this done. You know, it's like you go to the store and get all the groceries you need. And it's like, you're supposed to be baking a cake, right? But you know, if we're like, when I walk in the kitchen, I want to smell a cake, right? I don't want to see some eggs on the floor and, you know, some flour on the ceiling and be like, what on earth were you guys doing? I expected a cake. Like, they've got the stuff and they're supposed to get to this point. It's like, Denver is supposed to get back to the championship, right? Like, anything else, you know, they got to the championship and then they were supposed to be adding enough to win the championship. So if they don't even get back to the championship, it's like, what a major step back. And granted, it's very, very difficult to be successful and to stay successful in a league like this. And you never know how many opportunities you're going to get, right? But they better do it. They've got enough pieces where you should get a whole bunch of success and, you know, not really hang around at 500 for that long. And I feel the same way about Philly, right? Like, you look at that lineup, you look at their attack, you look at their defense that gets better. You know, you look at their midfield bringing in all these weapons. All right, let's see it. You know, let's see some production. You know, it does look really good on their record, only having the two losses. But still, got to keep on producing. And we'll see those teams square off next weekend out in Denver.
Will we actually? That's going to be exciting. I'm very excited for that. They're also so that is very exciting. Coming from a person who wrote Philadelphia CJ Kirst, who, if we had to assign a member of the animal kingdom, would be something like a great white shark that somehow taught itself how to drive a monster truck and or operate a chainsaw when necessary, is the perfect comparison for our MVP favorite. Oh my goodness. CJ Kirst. What are we going to do with him, man? What are we going to do?
Friend of
the
pod.
Appreciate the swim and evade slide more than the little dinker over Dylan Ward's high arc, or do you like the little chip shot with, like, he's aggressively doing that leaner with, like, he's like staring way at the ground.
Yeah. I feel like, so the swim and everything like that is just what I kind of feel like was the result of, you know, just a will that couldn't be broken and, you know, just head and shoulders athletic ability. Right? Like, watch what this freak is going to do. But throw in a little, like, he probably shot that like 45 miles an hour. And the audacity to shoot on Dylan Ward at like 45 miles an hour, You just have to have so much of an understanding of what's going to work and a confidence that it's actually going to work. You know, that is definitely having the answer key well before the test, you know, because I would try to shoot, you know, as hard as I possibly could and close my eyes and just hope he doesn't know where it's going. But no, that's an insane mastery and certain confidence in your skills to throw effectively a changeup like that, kind of buckle his knees. Wild performance by him. So yeah, no, my hat goes off to that shot, which is bananas.
Can't stop, won't stop, we won't either. If you're in the Denver area, make your plans right now, because I mean it's 9 p.m. Eastern, but what is Denver? A couple hours behind Central Time, Mountain Time.
Yeah, I think they're 2 hours.
7 p.m. Saturday, July 25th. Get your ticket now, because that's going to be an epic encounter between the two leading contenders for the 2026 PLL title. That'll do it for this PLL Happy Hour podcast. If you like what you heard, share with a friend, leave a review, and we'll catch you next time right back here wherever you catch your podcast.